File 64. The fight against pollution of the mind must be waged simultaneously with the training of the body. Today, the whole of our public life may be compared to a hothouse for the forced growth of sexual notions and incitements. A glance at the bill of fare provided by our cinemas, playhouses, and theatres suffices to prove that this is not the right food, especially for our young people. Hoardings and advertisement kiosks combine to attract the public in the most vulgar manner. Anyone who has not altogether lost contact with adolescent yearnings will realize that all this must have very grave consequences. This seductive and sensuous atmosphere puts notions into the heads of our youth which, at their age, ought still to be unknown to them. Unfortunately, the results of this kind of education can best be seen in our contemporary youth, who are prematurely grown up, and therefore old before their time. The law courts, from time to time, throw a distressing light on the spiritual life of our 14 and 15-year-old children. Who, therefore, will be surprised to learn that venereal disease claims its victims at this age? And is it not a frightful shame to see the number of physically weak and intellectually spoiled young men who have been introduced to the mysteries of marriage by the whores of the big cities? No, those who want seriously to combat prostitution must first of all assist in removing the spiritual conditions on which it thrives. They will have to clean up the moral pollution of our city culture fearlessly and without regard for the outcry that will follow. If we do not drag our youth out of the morass of their present environment, they will be engulfed by it. Those people who do not want to see these things are deliberately encouraging them, and are guilty of spreading the effects of prostitution to the future, for the future belongs to our young generation. This process of cleaning our culture will have to be applied in practically all spheres. The stage, art, literature, the cinema, the press and advertisement posters, all must have the stains of pollution removed and be placed in the service of a national and cultural idea. The life of the people must be free from the asphyxiating perfume of our modern eroticism, and also from every unmanly and prudish form of insincerity. In all these things, the aim and the method must be determined by thoughtful consideration for the preservation of our national well-being, in body and soul. The right to personal freedom comes second in importance to the duty of maintaining the race. Only after such measures have been put into practice can a medical campaign against this scourge begin with some hope of success. But here again, half measures will be valueless. Far-reaching and important decisions will have to be made. It would be doing things by halves if incurables were given the opportunity of infecting one healthy person after another. This would be that kind of humanitarianism which would allow hundreds to perish in order to save the suffering of one individual. The demand that it should be made impossible for defective people to continue to propagate defective offspring is a demand that is based on most reasonable grounds, and its proper fulfillment is the most humane task that mankind has to face. Unhappy and undeserved suffering in millions of cases will be spared, with the result that there will be a gradual improvement in national health. A determined decision to act in this manner will at the same time provide an obstacle against the further spread of venereal disease. It would then be a case, where necessary, of mercilessly isolating all incurables. Perhaps a barbaric measure for those unfortunates, but a blessing for the present generation and for posterity. The temporary pain thus experienced in this century can and will spare future thousands of generations from suffering. The fight against syphilis and its pacemaker prostitution is one of the gigantic tasks of mankind. Gigantic because it is not merely a case of solving a single problem, but the removal of a whole series of evils which are the contributory causes of this scourge. Disease of the body, in this case, is merely the result of a diseased condition of the moral, social, and racial instincts. But if, for reasons of indolence or cowardice, this fight is not fought to a finish, we may imagine what conditions will be like 500 years hence. Little of God's image will be left in human nature except to mock the Creator. But what has been done in Germany to counteract this scourge? If we think calmly over the answer, we shall find it distressing. It is true that in governmental circles the terrible and injurious effects of this disease were well known, but the countermeasures which were officially adopted were ineffective and a hopeless failure. They tinkered with cures for the symptoms, wholly regardless of the cause of the disease. Prostitutes were medically examined and controlled as far as possible, and when signs of infection were apparent, they were sent to hospital. When outwardly cured, they were once more let loose on humanity. It is true that protective legislation was introduced which made sexual intercourse a punishable offence for all those not completely cured, or those suffering from venereal disease. This legislation was correct in theory, but in practice it failed completely. In the first place, in the majority of cases, women will decline to appear in court as witnesses against men who have robbed them of their health. Women would be exposed far more than men to uncharitable remarks in such cases, and one can imagine what their position would be if they had been infected by their own husbands. Should women, in that case, lay a charge? Or what should they do? In the case of the man, there is the additional fact that he frequently is unfortunate enough to run up against this danger when he is under the influence of alcohol. His condition makes it impossible for him to assess the qualities of his amorous beauty, a fact which is well known to every diseased prostitute, and makes them single out men in this ideal condition for preference. The result is that the unfortunate man is not able to recollect later on who his compassionate benefactress was, which is not surprising in cities like Berlin and Munich. Many of such cases are visitors from the provinces, who, held speechless and enthralled by the magic charm of city life, become an easy prey for prostitutes. In the final analysis, who is able to say whether he has been infected or not? Are there not innumerable cases on record where an apparently cured person has a relapse and does untold harm without knowing it? Therefore, in practice, the results of these legislative measures are negative. The same applies to the control of prostitution. And finally, even medical treatment and cure are nowadays unsafe and doubtful. One thing only is certain. The scourge has spread further and further, in spite of all measures, and this alone suffices definitely to stamp and substantiate their inefficiency. Everything else that was undertaken was just as inefficient as it was absurd. The spiritual prostitution of the people was neither arrested, nor was anything whatsoever undertaken in this direction. Those, however, who do not regard this subject as a serious one, would do well to examine the statistical data of the spread of this disease, study its growth in the last century, and contemplate the possibilities of its further development. The ordinary observer, unless he were particularly stupid, would experience a cold shudder if the position were made clear to him. The half-hearted and wavering attitude adopted in pre-war Germany towards this iniquitous condition can assuredly be taken as a visible sign of national decay. When the courage to fight for one's own health is no longer in evidence, then the right to live in this world of struggle also ceases. One of the visible signs of decay in the old Reich was the slow setback which the general cultural level experienced. But by culture, I do not mean that which we nowadays style as civilization, which, on the contrary, may rather be regarded as inimical to the spiritual elevation of life. At the turn of the last century, a new element began to make its appearance in our world. It was an element which had been hitherto absolutely unknown and foreign to us. In former times, there had certainly been offences against good taste, but these were mostly departures from the orthodox canons of art, and posterity could recognize a certain historical value in them. But the new products showed signs not only of artistic aberration, but of spiritual degeneration. Here, in the cultural sphere, the signs of the coming collapse first became manifest. The Bolshevization of art is the only cultural form of life and the only spiritual manifestation of which Bolshevism is capable. Anyone to whom this statement may appear strange need only take a glance at those lucky states which have become Bolshevized, and, to his horror, he will there recognize those morbid monstrosities which have been produced by insane and degenerate people, all those artistic aberrations which are classified under the names of Cubism and Dadaism, since the opening of the present century, are manifestations of art which have come to be officially recognized by the state itself. This phenomenon made its appearance even during the short-lived period of the Soviet Republic in Bavaria. At that time, one might easily have recognized how all the official posters, propagandist pictures, and newspapers, etc., showed signs not only of political, but also of cultural decadence. About 60 years ago, a political collapse such as we are experiencing today would have been just as inconceivable as the cultural decline which has been manifest in Cubist and Futurist pictures ever since 1900. 60 years ago, an exhibition of so-called dadistic experiences would have been an absolutely preposterous idea. The organizers of such an exhibition would then have been certified with a lunatic asylum, whereas today they are appointed presidents of art societies. At that time, such an epidemic would never have been allowed to spread. Public opinion would not have tolerated it, and the government would not have remained silent. for it is the duty of a government to save its people from being stampeded into such intellectual madness. But intellectual madness would have resulted from a development that followed the acceptance of this kind of art. It would have marked one of the worst changes in human history, for it would have meant that a retrogressive process had begun to take place in the human brain, the final stages of which would be unthinkable.